Oh, I'm so excited to hear your guys' accents.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Sappening Podcast.
Sappening!
You are listening to episode 282 of Sappening Podcast featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. He's the villain, I'm the hero, and despite my angel eyes, we're diving into a world of vampires, skeletons, and anthems of the unwanted.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, it is January the 1st, because we are joined by Ash Costello of New Year's Day. See, that's all you had to do. You didn't have to do all jam them fucking song titles, eh? You could have just done something along those lines. But yes, this week's guest is vocalist, singer, songwriter, and all-round legend, Ash Costello.
Yes, Queen of the Goths, all things spooky and paranormal. New Year's Day have always flown the flag to be your own monsters, huge stage theatrics, and perfectly blending metal rhythms with fun pop hooks. But I feel Ash is one of those people in the scene who has had so many misconceptions on her journey as a songwriter, her influences, mentality, and vision for her art, and enjoying the journey of doing it. So with this band releasing their fifth studio album, Half Black Heart, just recently, we thought this was the perfect time to have her on and just have the chillest conversation about everything behind the scenes. And trust us, we've tried to do this so many times.
Yeah, we are.
So glad it could finally happen.
Yes, we are. Thank you very much to Ash for giving us her time and being exactly what I expected of her and being a top legend. So yeah, we had a great chat. We covered everything from the new record to touring plans to a favorite UK-based beer. I wasn't expecting that. She told us some brilliant stories about writing with some of our favorite bands, which is unbelievable. Here's a question for Ash that I'm going to ask her next time I see her. Does Gerard Way live in a big black Transylvanian mansion? Shit, I should have asked. Anyway, this was an absolutely brilliant, down-to-earth chat. It was a chat more than, it wasn't like an interview. Not that I like to say that we do interviews. Mm. We normally just like to have easy chats or whatever. But this was a lot of fun. She gave us a lot of info and she let us into a lot of stuff that she didn't have to. So thank you very much, Ash. We had a great time with you. You're a legend. Thank you.
Yeah, literally felt like three friends just going to the pub, a bar, for a well overdue catch up. And she even shows us around her new house, some decorations we weren't expecting, and explains her love for all things WWE, performing Rhea Ripley's first theme song, and just some absolutely ridiculous moments in between this career that she's really established for herself. But before we get into the conversation, just a little reminder, as always, if you enjoy what we do, please go and support us via our Patreon page at patreon.com/sappening. Festival season is right around the corner, and lately they've been in our group organizing the camping side of it and traveling together. Someone had some bad news recently that they've been consulted with memes. Others have been celebrating new job opportunities. It's just a really rad time. So if you'd like to come and join the community, patreon.com/Sapnin, and let us know that you're listening to this via our social media pages at Sapnin Pod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter. But without any further ado, let's get straight into the chaos. This is Ash Costello of New Year's Day on episode 282 of Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin! Ooh.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Sapnin!
Yay!
We are joined right now by the fantastic Ash Costello of the brilliant New Year's Day. Ash, how are you?
I'm doing very good, thank you. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, not bad.
Good.
Not bad.
I'm glad we could get this sorted. I know we've wanted to do it for a while. We get a lot of requests for you and your guys, so thank you very much for giving us your time.
Of course. Thank you. Sorry I was so hard to get a hold of. Like I said, I've just moved out of state. And as I showed you, I don't really have much in my office going on except for a lot of stuffed animals here. And, you know, just the essentials, obviously. And then like on my desk is like, why do I have these? So, you know, we're slowly unpacking, trying to get our life together here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how has the move been? How is things just going day to day at the moment? And how is just life treating you?
It's finally coming together. Moving is so expensive. But I moved out of California because that's what everyone is doing, it sounds like. And I'm just so happy. I'm just stoked. Stoked.
Nice. Can you disclose where you moved to, or are you keeping that a secret?
We're keeping it a secret to the best of our ability. I'm sure it's already out there, but try not to just like put it out there because we have some crazies. We have some stalkers, so we have to be a little careful, sadly.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. That's terrifying.
What's left of the move to do? Is there any big things you got to get sorted? Is there any little like nightmares that's being propping up?
Yes. You never realize how quickly all the little things add up. And this house has 5 billion windows, and I feel like we've spent a fortune on curtain rods and curtains.
Yeah, like as adults, like when you're growing up, nobody's ever like, oh, I tell you what's going to cost you a lot of your money. Just covering windows.
I'm going to show you right now. Hold on. Look at all these windows that still need curtains.
Wow.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Someone needs feed in there.
Am I skeleton? Yeah, we need to feed him. He's just wasting away.
Yeah. Okay. I like that you've got the important things. You've got the skeleton ready.
We don't have a couch yet, but I do have a 13-foot skeleton.
So. The essentials.
That's exactly what I was expecting. Yeah, that was exactly what I was expecting from you. Just a big 13-foot skeleton.
That's what people feel like when I've shared pictures of the skeleton, they're like, you really have a 13-foot skeleton? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, well, I'm not surprised. I'm like, duh. Of course, that was like the first thing I brought here.
Well, I have questions about this now. Is there a story behind the skeleton? Was it an impulse buy? Did you see him in a store?
There is a story behind the skeleton, actually. So one of my really good friends is co-owner of Black Craft. And
nice.
I went to a Halloween party at his house, and he had two huge skeletons. And he's a bit of a nomad. He's always moving. He just picks up and moves all the time. So I was on Facebook Marketplace and happened to see a picture of a skeleton with like this big, beautiful window behind it. And I said, I know that window. That's my friend's window. He's selling a skeleton. So I messaged him like, if you're selling the skeleton, I'll buy it. And he goes, don't buy it. Just come take it. And I'm like, yes, I will. I'm on my way. Yeah. So that's the story behind the skeleton.
Nice. Do you get the other one, or is somebody else out there in the world got
someone
a matching
else
one?
The other one, but now I've got the itch. Now I want like four more.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you could have them like just out in front of your house, touching hands. You could walk under them every time you go home.
Oh. Well, the reason why he's in the house right now is because the neighborhood we live in is all older people.
Oh.
And so we thought, maybe not outside.
Yeah, they don't need to be reminded of what's coming.
We need to kind of ease them into the young kind of Satanist-looking neighbors. So.
Yeah, that's true. I bet you've got some very concerned elderly people with flags outside.
They love us. They love us. They've invited us onto their dog walking crew. So, yeah, they're all like super old. We're talking like in their 80s and 90s, old ladies. So cute.
Nice. Have you got a dog, or is it just a random invite?
We do have a dog. Yes.
Oh, great. Good.
There.
What a spot. Yeah, what a spot.
Dwelling in the sun. Yeah. Wow. I love how we started with a full like MTV Cribs tour and talking about decor.
MTV Cribs with like no furniture.
It's the real behind the scenes. It's the real behind the scenes people don't see. But no, Ash, I mean, there's so much going on with this music and the band and stuff at the moment. I mean, like, you know, this new record, Half Black Heart, that's just come out. You've been sitting on it for quite a while, and it's been such a journey to get this music out there. How has it felt for you now, finally having it out in the world and people to hear it and see the reaction for it after all this time?
I don't really get fazed by it, to be honest, because I've been doing this for 20 years, and I'm constantly in a cycle of put out music, you move on, write new music, put out music, move on, write new music, push yourself, you know, constantly. But I'm never just kind of sitting there going, right, everyone likes it. I can kind of take a breath. I'm like, not even thinking about that. I'm already thinking about writing the next songs and what's next. And I don't really ever just like, I guess it never really just sinks in. I'm constantly thinking ahead.
It is a weird industry to be a part of with that and kind of thinking of time scales, because, you know, these are songs you wrote so long ago. As you said, you've moved on. There's probably different thoughts and feelings of stuff that you've separated yourself from. So when it comes out and the public hear it, not only have you already started on probably new music, but it must be like a weird reminder sometimes when you go back to those songs and go, oh, that's where I was when trying to write this, or that's a place I was trying to come from.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely snapshots in time for me, but sometimes I don't really love that. Like, people will say things like, oh, you sound so different, or the sounds change. It's like, yes, that was, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And nobody is the same. I'm sure, you know, we all, our musical taste and who we are and what kind of art moves us evolves over time. And so, yeah, it's a great snapshot of where I was, but it's like a blessing and a curse. It's a fun reminder, but also I don't get attached to it, and I don't want other people to get attached to it either. You know, being a band.
Oh, you know. we had to quit because we did a bad record. So, yeah, we didn't even have time to move it. Well, we even tried to move on, and people went, no, we still remember that record, so we're not forgiving you. get out of the band.
That's, you know what, everyone thinks that when they're writing a record, and that's always in the back of our minds. But we, like, with this record, I thought, we're not going to think of what people like and don't like, and we're just going to go based off of if it excites us. And if we're in the studio going, that's fucking sick, then we feel like someone's going to come along for the ride. Like, if we think it's cool, someone else has got to think it's cool, right? But you never know.
Yeah, what has been the reaction since the record came out? It seems pretty positive online.
It was better than I thought. You know, I thought, oh, people will like it, and I hope that they really like it. But it seems like everyone really likes it. And that's all you can hope for. You know, that's all you can hope for. And it's weird. The songs we think are going to be like the ones. I don't know why I even bother to do that anymore, because it's never is. And the ones that the fans are kind of latching onto, I'm a little surprised. A little surprised. So pleasantly surprised. And like some of the sleeper ones that I was like, the ones that maybe I would skip are the ones that everyone's into. So what do I know?
Yeah, it's so wild how all those kind of things turn out. But what I found interesting with the title for this record as well, Half Black Heart, is just really the word half, because I feel like you're a band who've always had this kind of weird duality in stepping into different scenes and different worlds and just being interpreted in just various ways. Like, you have such a fun side to the band, but such a dark aesthetic. You know, obviously big love of metal, but there's big pop bits in the band. You know, how has it been for you with that mixture over the years? Is it being frustrating? Is it quite nice that you can get into different areas? Or is it just being a part of this wild ride for the last two decades?
I wish I could tell you that it was like a preconceived, thought out, meticulous idea, but it wasn't. And we're just one of those bands that's very lucky. Because a lot of bands in the Warped Tour era, so we're talking 2005 to maybe like 2015, when Warped Tour and that style of music died out, couldn't cross the threshold into mainstream rock. Very few did. And we're very lucky. We did very effortlessly. We were welcomed in with open arms. The music was seamless. And so I wish I could say there was a plan, but there wasn't. And I think the testament is just we always were true to ourselves. We weren't really, really trying to be anything that we weren't actually, to like sell or fit in, or, you know, for whatever reason, someone wouldn't be authentic. We just kind of did what we thought was cool and got lucky, I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's the best way to be then, rather than, you know, writing to an audience or writing for an audience or having to do that.
I always said, like, just be yourself, and if there's a place in the market for it, lucky you.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Has there been any misconceptions over the years where you're just, like, a struggle or trying to battle or just not understand how they've kind of come about?
Oh, my gosh. Misconception may as well be my middle name. I think being a female in a band with a lot of notoriety and a lot of male friends in the music industry, misconceptions is a common daily, weekly, monthly, yearly occurrence. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start on misconceptions. You know, we've gone through a lot of member changes over the past 20 years. And the I guess this is the first one that comes to mind. It's always like, well, Ashley, it must be Ashley. She's a girl. She's a diva or a bitch or hard to work with or whatever. And we're still friends with all of our ex-band members, minus one. Minus one egg that was in there. But for everyone else, you know, they would either go on because a bigger band would take them, which we'd always be happy for, or they just, touring life is hard. You know, maybe they just don't want to tour anymore. Simple as that. So that's a misconception I've dealt with quite a bit, or, you know, just typical stuff. I always just like to say, whatever you heard, it's true and probably worse. So leave me alone. So just believe that shit and move on. Believe it and then leave me alone. I'm kind of used to it.
This industry is just so weird at times. So, like, I find it mad that there are bands out there who've never had line of changes, never mind ones that, you know, have had to.
crazy. Like one of my favorite bands, AFI, no member change. Weird. That's like the unicorn of like, oh, my parents have been married for 53 years. Like, that's just not common. Because being in a band, it's like having five boyfriends or five girlfriends. And you're trying to navigate all these emotional relationships and the dynamics and needs that come with each one. And it's just sometimes so hard to navigate. I didn't go to college for like business leadership skills. I'm winging it. So, but we've come a long way.
Again, I think everyone's winging it in their own weird way as well. There's no blueprint or like instructions when you go to be in a band or music.
There really isn't. And you know, when I started my band, I read a lot of books about like how to make money in the music industry. Or there was a really famous book. Now I read it so long ago, I can't remember the name of it, but it was written by the guy that was in the band that did the song Closing Time. Time for you. So he wrote this great book about the music industry. And it's like, you could read and read and study, and nothing will prepare you at all for the real life aspect of learning from the streets of being in a band. Like, everything is going to go out the window. Just, you know, you have to learn by trial and error and experience only.
I think I learned more from Spinal Tap than I did from actual books about being in a band.
Very good. Very good. Yes. Just always check the measurements of your stage production. I've actually had the opposite problem. I've ordered things that were way too big. Oh. And they're like, how are we supposed to put this on stage? And I'm like, fuck. And how did I make that wrong?
That's brilliant. Yeah. I genuinely believe every band has had one of those Spinal Tap moments.
Like, oh, I have been. How many venues I've gone lost in and been like, Spinal Tap, I don't know where I'm going.
013 in Tilburg. Is it Tilburg? I think it's Tilburg in Holland, in Netherlands. Yeah, it's got like six different floors of shows going on. So, yeah, I've been up and down lifts. Like,
you're just walking into different hallways.
Yeah, I've got lost. Before now, I found myself under the stage. I don't know how I got there, but I was there and I was meant to be on the stage. So, yeah, I've learned more from Spinal Tap, definitely, than I have from reading about books about being in a band as well.
I agree.
What did you order that was massive?
My Ego Riser.
Oh.
My Ego Riser. It was for Warped Tour 2015, and we got the main stage. So I was like, we need to ramp it up. And when we got it, I was like, oh my God, this is Slipknot huge. Like, this is way too huge. Whoops. So we tried it for a couple shows, and then quickly we're like, yeah, we got to dump this.
I'm 18 foot in the air. We've got to get rid of this. It's too high up.
It was too high, too wide. It was just all bad. And then we had these, we had one stage set up where it was like the backdrop was a skeleton with red and black hair. And then the skeleton's arms were supposed to look like it was coming around the front of the stage and flipping everyone off. And it looked great for the first week. And then we realized that the materials I ordered it in were just way too heavy. And stagehands were complaining, and one person even broke their pee on it, so we had to get rid of them. I know. Oops, my bad again.
Oh, yeah.
Whoopsie.
Oh, yeah, I'm just thinking of how you could,
It looked really cool for 1 week, though.
Yeah, I've done the same with my band. Like, we did, we played a venue called the Astoria in London. It's been demolished since, and that was our first big headline. Real big headline show in London. I think it was 2,000 capacity. And we spent all of our fee on ramps and staging for the stage. And our drummer was like 18 foot in the air. And I went up to see him once and I was like, I'm not going to see you for the rest of the show. You are too far away. So good luck with the rest of it. I'm off. See you later.
Bye. We played this show in Austria that was a festival. I forget the name of the festival. And our stage was so far. It was us and Frank and the Rattlesnakes.
Frank and the Rattlesnakes.
Yes. And our stage was like down the hill around the corner. You couldn't even see the festival from our stage. And I remember thinking like, no one's going to come watch us. So who cares? And there was like a big school bus on the stage. And we're like, where do we put the drums? They're like, oh, the drums go on the school bus. I was like, why? That's so weird. And I was like, well, no one's going to come see us, so fuck it. Let's just have fun. But then everyone came. And I looked up and my drummer was way up there on the school bus with no railing behind him. But we also, because we thought no one was going to come, we got super hammered in the artist tent before the show. And it was a hot mess. It's a hot mess.
I know what I'm doing later. I'm YouTubing that guy now later on.
Yes, YouTube it. It's somewhere on there. I've never seen it. I don't need to relive it, but I'm sure it is.
It sounds like a mad atmosphere and a mad setup for that.
Yeah. Well,
we normally like to ask bands now and again, like, the weirdest place they've played. Because we've had people tell us about venues that don't necessarily scream music gig, but some of the biggest artists have been there. Frank Iero's told us about being on the back of a hot dog truck. We've had people telling us about zoos and, you know, on a cruise, all sorts. Like, is there anything that comes to mind for you as just, like, out there places that you've had to perform or sing or anything at all?
I feel like there's so many places, it's hard to pick one. So I see in another band called the Haxons, it's me and the bass player Rob Zombie, it's just two person. And we did a tour two years or so ago. We played out of the back of an old Ford pickup truck in a swamp.
Ooh.
The venue was the Paper Tiger in, like, Texas somewhere. And when they took us to our green room, they said, don't leave the green room if you don't have to. There's alligators here. And we're like, there's bugs everywhere because the lights shining on the truck, attracting bugs, and the truck was, like, sinking into the swamp. It was kind of awesome. The food there was amazing. Had like a crawfish broil truck. Food was excellent. Stage, not so much.
Yeah, as weird gigs go, on the back of a pickup truck in a swamp.
It was very swampy. You had to take a bridge to get to the area, like a bridge over the swamp to get to the area where the truck was.
Wow.
So it was like, we were so like, well, it's one of these really cool stories. You know, he's going from playing arenas with Rob Zombie to playing on the back of a Ford pickup truck with me. Well, you know what? Now you have stories to tell your friends.
Yeah. Yes. The music industry. There it is.
Yeah, sums it up. You're playing an arena one day, and you're playing a Ford truck the next day.
The only thing that's missing from that swamp is Shrek himself.
I wish. That would have been awesome.
I feel like Robert the Zombie would do quite well in a swamp as well. I feel like that's his natural habitat.
It's so funny you say that, because I say Robert Zombie too.
How is he always dusty? Why is he always covered in sand? Where's he been? I don't know.
Thank you. I'm always like, why do you look like you just crawled out of the grave? I think that's the point.
Yeah, but I've seen him on off days looking dusty. I don't know where he gets his dust from.
He must shower. Blown in.
Yeah, he's got like his own Wes Borland case. Yeah, only the finest dust for Robert the Zombie.
Very fancy.
Oh, nice.
Obviously, I reckon it's on the rider. I think it's a request to every show.
It's in the back of his Dracula. Sorry. Sorry about that. I made a pun.
Well, you mentioned a few times already just your history of being at Warped Tour. And, you know, that is such an iconic festival that's no longer with us. And there's so many amazing memories bands have had from that. But am I right in saying that there's such a weird full circle moment you had with Warped Tour, from seeing The Used really early on and then ended up singing with Bert on the same stage?
Nice.
Yes. So my parents thought gang members went to Warped Tour. Like, they didn't really understand what Warped Tour was. So me and my friends drove and snuck in. You know, we snuck in one of the gates, and I always tell that story at, like, the Warped Tour press conference, and I say, don't do that. Oh, we did it. And when we snuck in, I snuck in just in time to see The Used, who was one of my favorite bands in 2003, I think it was, during the bridge of Taste of Ink, climbing the rafters as Bert did back in the day, and then, like, falling into the crowd back before crowd surfing wasn't allowed anymore. Warped Tour, wah, wah, boo. And I just had this moment of like, oh, I want to be that. I want to be him. I don't want to be here in the crowd. I want to be there on the stage. And so when we did Warped Tour 2017 together, maybe, I got to tell him that story. And then he was so excited over it. He was so excited and humbled by this and asked if I would come on stage and sing Taste of Ink. Yes, it was very cool. Because he was a huge influence on me. I always gravitated towards the singers that didn't have like the technically perfect voices like Burt McCracken, Gerard Way, Billy Corgan. Why can't I think of the singer of Taking Back Sunday right now?
Adam Lazara.
Adam Lazara, yes. You know, the voices that maybe had more, or Davey Havoc, had their unique style, even though it wasn't perfect. And so I just like took so much influence from him as a vocalist and a stage performer. He's incredible.
Yes. Mm. Yes, he is. And yeah, AFI, I'm loving your AFI love. We don't talk about AFI enough on this podcast. Apart from when we're trying our best to get the bastards to come on, yeah.
That's very true.
Davey is elusive. He's very hard to get. He's one of the few people I have never met. I've had songwriting sessions with Jade, and I've literally been from here to here with Davey. But I'm the kind of person that's like, I don't want to bother you. If you talk to me or we end up talking organically, that's great. But I'm not going to like go out of my way to bug you. So he's always been right here, but he's really quiet. So I've never been like, hi, Davey. Like, I love you. You know, I'm just trying to play it cool. You know, so I've never actually talked to him, but he's one of my heroes.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't think I've ever met him either. That's
such a cool restraint that you have, that he's up there on that hero list for you. You've been that close to him and not wanted to bother him because, you know, this, I think like, you know, if it was me in that situation, I'd definitely be tapping him on the shoulder just to say hello. But yeah, I'm sure it's weird when you are in those circumstances, when you've been listening to that guy's voice and his lyrics for so long and you're in that room, it must be hard not to do that.
Well, I want to tell him like, hey, your Long Beach arena performance of Silver and Cold changed my life I want to say it was probably 2003 as well. But if it happens, it happens. Like, for example, Gerard Way, as I mentioned, was one of my absolute heroes. And I did a songwriting session at his house with him. And we did a two-day songwriting session and it went so well. And they invited us for a second session and I declined because I thought, you know, I didn't make an ass out of myself for 2 days and I don't want to push it. I've left a good impression. Like, let's just like leave it alone. We don't need any more days. Because I was like, we got the song. It's fine. I don't need to be here any longer. But I don't know what it is about me. Maybe it's like a self-deprecation kind of thing where I'm like, they don't care. They don't want me in their face. Like, just leave them alone. You know?
But they do, though. They do. They do.
He invited you back. Yeah. So you must want you there.
Yeah, they did. They invited us to come back and play Warhammer with them. And they had like a whole Warhammer room, which I'm super into. You know, I love rolling the dice and being like, my sword is about to pierce your shield on your orc. And I was just like, just play it cool, man. Play it cool.
Nice. Well, yeah, hopefully you get invited back again. Yeah, well, yeah, but what, yeah. I'd be worried that they think that you just weren't interested. You were like, oh, fuck. Mike Amakaru? I've never heard of him.
Well, the thing was, the song we wrote sounded, it didn't make our record because it just sounded so My Chemical Romance. It didn't sound like New Year's Day at all. And it broke my heart because I wanted to force it onto the record just to say we had Gerard Way on the record. But it sounded like a Danger Days song, which is awesome. Great song. But, and the experience was incredible. But I just kind of knew like, I didn't want to waste their time.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? I didn't, it would have been awesome to just hang out, but which is what we mostly did in the songwriting sessions. Very little songwriting was done. They mostly had us watch weird Japanese movies that they were super into at the time that I cannot remember the names of for the life of me. One was so strange. It was just the weirdest movie ever. It was like this, it was a Japanese man in a white room and things keep getting shoved into the white room. Like a flower pot or like a dildo at one point. Sounds like that. I'm telling you, a super dirty movie. And he has to figure out how to get out of this room with the tools he's given. It's a very weird.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Someone Google it. Tell me what it was called.
But yeah, you're gonna get some weird Google searches with those keywords.
I'm not Googling dildo man. googling man in room unknown with dildo.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. My yeah, my search history seem worse. I'm sure.
I was about to say, I'm sure there's worse.
let's not get into that. But do you think that song will ever see the light of day? I mean, you've been sitting on it for so long. I mean,
it's possible. We were actually talking recently about reaching out about maybe sync licensing it. Maybe it wouldn't make sense on a New Year's Day record. Maybe it makes sense in like a movie or a TV show or something like that. Maybe there is a place for it somewhere.
Nice. Well, yes, I would love to hear. Oh, yeah. So what was the writing process like? Like, I know you said you didn't do much writing, but yeah, what would happen? Did you go to him with like bits of an idea and then?
So it was their first songwriting session. It was Ray Torr-Jardway and their producer in a studio in the back of Jardway's house. And they didn't really have much prepared, which was fine because I always come prepared, which I've learned to do in songwriting sessions. And so I said, I had a couple ideas. And I said, I wanted to write one song from the point of Kylo Ren. And Gerard quickly was like, love it. Let's do it. And he's analog the way I am. I don't use a laptop. I still handwrite all my lyrics. So we sat on our tummies, like kicking our feet in the air, kind of talking back and forth about this song from the perspective of Kylo Ren. And he would say like, ooh, I love that. Yes, let's do that. And then he would, you know, go, okay, I'm going to go lay down the vocal and see if you can just copy what I do. And there was this moment where he was like, hey, Ashley, can you sing The Snow? And I was like, Gerard, wait, just said my name. you know, so crazy. But we wanted to play it cool because they specifically didn't want to do songwriting sessions with super fans, even though I'm the biggest fucking MyFam fan in the world. And I gave myself away too at one point because he goes, what's the highest note you can hit? And I said, actually, the highest note I can hit was when we did a cover of Sleep. It's a Mike Hemm song. We covered it for your tribute album. He goes, what tribute album? Like, there's a whole tribute album of really big bands covering your songs. And he's like, oh. Because I went into that room to listen to it. And I was like, well, I just gave myself away.
Yeah. the thing is with that, though, is by now, surely he doesn't write with anybody who's probably not a My Chemical Romance fan. Because how do you...
I don't think they do songwriting sessions anymore. I don't think they do.
Yeah, okay.
I think they were like, we're too busy.
Yeah, perhaps that's because everybody is a My Chemical Romance fan. And that's it. Now he's like, I can't fucking move for it. It was your fault. You wrote those brilliant albums. Well done.
That is such a pinch me moment, though, of being able to be like in his house and getting that personal experience of what it's actually like writing a song with him. Because as you said, they don't do that. And you really, really hear Gerard really getting involved with other music these days as well. So like, yeah, that must be such a one to look back on and go, I can't believe I got to have that.
I think because they are very busy, and I think they realized that songwriting, maybe there wasn't really much in it for them. Like, more, it was more for other people than for them, I think. I mean, it certainly was for us. And Ray Torr was so sweet. You know, we just got to chatting, and I told him I was into taxidermy. And he said, I have a taxidermy I got from Vietnam when My Chemical Romance played there. He goes, but my wife doesn't like it, and I'll bring it for you. And the next day, surely he did, and I've got it on my shelf downstairs. It's a cobra in a jar, Gila, holding another smaller snake in its mouth. And when I moved here, it spilled a little bit. So it like reeked like cobra snake tequila, probably 2 decades old. And I got it on my hands. I don't know who drinks this stuff. If it wasn't all the way downstairs, I'd show you. But it's pretty cool. I get why his wife wouldn't like it. It's kind of scary looking. Yeah.
Awesome stories. Yeah. This is.
You know what? I've got so many weird, this is your life moment, weird stories that I don't tell because like, I told the My Chem story once on a live and everyone was like, of course, Ashley name drops. And I'm like, it's not name dropping. Oh, no. The story from my life. Like, what else am I supposed to say? It happened.
No, we'll
tell you.
We love it on this podcast. This podcast is all about giving your flowers to people as well. So like, we had Dal Plumbo on from Glassjaw, Head Automatica, and he's like one of my favorite vocalists of all time ever.
Glassjaw is another one of my favorite vocalists.
Yeah, I just spent about 40 minutes just telling him how much I love him. We're playing together at Slam Dunk this year in the UK, so...
Slam Dunk! what a hot mess Slam Dunk was when we played it.
Oh, was it? What happened?
We played, well, the layout was tough because I don't know if it's always in the city or what you'd consider the city. It was like lugging gear down the street, like on the sidewalk.
Was this a couple of years ago? Because I think they've moved this.
Oh, yeah. We're talking 2014 or 15.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they changed this since.
Very cramped, no AC room, away from the festival. And the whole thing was just really confusing. But it was sponsored by Desperados, so we were very excited about that. And I love Desperados so much. Nice. Can't get them out here.
Oh, really?
I can't find them, not even in the stores where they've got like import beers. You can buy them for like $5 on Amazon.
Yeah, I was almost certain that it was American itself. I bet it's a British band. I bet it's made by Carlin or one of them crap lagers now.
It's good, though.
Yeah. Well, we know what we're getting you when you come over now, and we're just going to have to get you a couple of cases of Desperados.
You I'm take me to Weatherspoons and buy me some Desperados, and I'll be happy as a pig in poop.
But as we said, like I feel it's so refreshing when artists talk about these moments they've had with other people and just how they felt, and just reassuring themselves as being a music fan at heart, because that's what we all are in the scene. But like, as you've talked about there, like I know you've done so many different writing sessions with just people just because to see and see how the feel is and see the inspiration and how they work. Is there anything on that side of stuff that you've really honed in on or learned or just had like a weird experience or just never thought you'd be able to be in those situations again, if it's someone like a Jared Way or one of AFI or anything like that?
You know, my first songwriting session, I remember sitting out in my car in outside the studio, like crying because I was so scared, because I've never really thought of myself as a songwriter. But after I started working with songwriters in 2000, like I'd say 18. And since then, it's my confidence with songwriting has just shot to the moon. You know, I have so much confidence now in my songwriting abilities. And now I call myself, I'm more of like a composer. I can compose and arrange, even though I don't play an instrument. And my songwriting language has grown and my vocabulary has grown. And I know how to get the ideas out of my head and describe it to someone else. So I feel like I always tell people, like when it comes to songwriting, confidence is kind of the best tool in your toolbox, you know, experience and confidence, which now I have in abundance. But before it was like, I'd be in rooms where there was like Celine Dion platinum records or Mariah Carey records on the wall. I was like, what am I doing here?
What was the switch that made you feel like you belonged in those rooms? Was there a moment where you were like, oh, I can do this. Like, I get this.
I don't think there was like a moment. I think just slowly over time until one day I was like, oh, I'm not scared anymore. Like, I feel really good about this. It took a while.
Is there anybody that you've written with or sat down to do writing days with that we'd be surprised about?
Yes, actually. There was a pop artist. I flew all the way to New York to write with this guy because he had this massive hit. You might not remember it. It was like a huge one hit wonder that's still on the radio today from like the early 2000s. It goes, how many times must I crash till I shatter? Always turn the car around. I don't know. It was Big US. And so we wrote with him. And we wrote for hours. And finally, he turns around in it's like this huge studio in Times Square. And he turns around in his chair and he goes, I don't really get you. No offense. He's like, I don't really get what you are. And I said, well, that's okay. Like, not everyone's going to understand. And he goes, and I'm very sorry about that. But he goes, there's two guys down the hall that do metal music. Do you want to just come knock on their door? I'm like, yeah, fuck it. I mean, I came all the way here. Might as well. So I knocked on their door. And the two guys that were the two metal writers happened to be the two writers for all of the music for WWE. And that's how I got my foot in the door working with WWE and being the theme song for one of the biggest wrestlers right now. Was just because I did the songwriting session where the guy was like, I don't know what to do with you, but it made me go down the hall. how my life has been like a series of just like being in the wrong place at the right time or the right place at the wrong time and kind of just working out. But that was like, that was the most, probably one of the most surprising songwriting sessions for me, is I was like, how did I get here right now? Like, how did this happen?
Yeah, look at it now. Yeah, it's fucking... Did you have any liking of WWE before you ended up involved?
Oh, yeah. Yes, we were a big WWE household growing up. My parents loved The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And we had like a big cutout of The Rock in our living room that would say The Rock sayings when he walked past it. So like big wrestling household. So, but when I did Rhea's theme song, she was barely getting started. You know, she was barely on NXT. So, but I think, you know, I like to say I knew that she was going to be a huge star. I called it. So, cause she's such a badass and yeah, weird, right? So weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's wild how that opportunity comes literally from knocking the door. And WWE embraced you guys a lot. Like, you got to do her theme at a WrestleMania a few years ago. Like, you've done a lot of stuff on NXT. Like, how has it been like being accepted by the wrestling world as well? Just a strange thing to happen again.
Freaking awesome. You can be like such a rock star because the shows are so massive. And it's so like, you know, from being in a band and being on tour, it's a bit slapdash backstage. Even on the biggest tour, it's a bit like, just fucking duct tape it, let's go. But in the WWE world, it's so professional and they treat you like you are Beyonce. And everyone is so humble and kind to you, no matter how big of a star they are. They treat you with respect. And it's just like a totally different world from music that is so surreal to be in, and you never want to leave. I go, can I just stay here? Like, I don't want to go back to the rock world. Can I stay in the wrestling world? This is great. And they did mention, they were like, do you want to take some wrestling courses? And I'm like, I think I should.
Look,
we don't need to talk about my age, but I think I'm past the point where I'm going to learn to wrestle, is what I'm saying. I'm a bit glass bone. I'll break my neck. I know it. I can see it from Molly. So it was like, nah.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. My friend used to be a wrestler in WWE, and he has a band called Junior, who are like a pop punk band, and he asked me if I would feature on the song. And I said, yes, only if we do a wrestling video. And in the video, I get powerbombed through a table, and it was the most painful thing I've ever done in my life, and I could not recommend it enough.
Wrestling is... you know, bit choreographed and planned, you're still getting massively hurt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I was explaining it to the bassist of one of my bands yesterday, and I was like, I was explaining what happened with WrestleMania, and he was like, it sounds like a soap opera. And I was like, that's exactly yeah. what it is, with violence.
Yeah, I love it. God, I feel like WWE has taken a turn finally back into a place giving us the characters that are so dynamic that you want to tune in. And I feel like there was a gap there where maybe we lost that a little bit.
A bit too PG, a bit too polished for a bit. And now I think it's back in that kind of almost attitude era with The Rock beating people up and covering them in blood. And yeah, so it's all go. Yeah.
How do you find it now, especially with Rhea? The fact that, you know, when she was first coming on the scene, you were her theme music, she's transitioned it to your good friends Motionless and White, and like you and Chris Motionless kind of have always had this bond anyway, but like you both have this musical bond around Rhea Ripley now. That must just be like a mad thing in itself.
I don't know why New Year's Day from the get-go is always intertwined with Motionless, but it really does seem to be that way. And I think it's just like the goth kids kind of find each other. There's a lot of talk about misconceptions. There's a lot of misconceptions that Chris and I are not friends. And I think it goes back to people like a good soap opera. They like a good soap opera, but that's absolutely not true. And I feel like, did you all not know we toured together before COVID? You know? Because it was a short run. It was our last US tour right before COVID hit. We were Motionless and White and In This Moment. And, you know, we got to have the nice shout out from Chris on stage every night, and things were great. I think maybe because they think we haven't toured together, or we don't, you know, maybe there's some animosity, but that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah, that does happen where people think just because bands haven't toured together, they must be nemesis for some reason. Yeah, it's crazy.
I know. And I think it's because I'm female too. I don't feel like you really see that stuff too much happening between males. But I think when males and female dynamic, people kind of like to make up a little bit of a soap opera. I get it. It's juicier than the truth, which is we're just normal people. We don't talk all the time, just like most normal people. I don't know what else to say. You know, people are busy.
Well, I saw this week that Rhea has had to relinquish the title. Mm. This should be some sort of Motionless / Ash Costello theme tune where you come together and you make the ultimate theme tune for her. Surely this.
I'll be on a wrestling squad together. Now, I will learn to wrestle for that.
Yes.
For Motionless Hawaii. And especially for Rhea, because she posted this picture of her as a teenager in her teenage room, and there's, you know, Motionless White poster in the background and a New Year's Day poster. And so I know she's a huge Motionless White fan, and I'm thrilled for her that she got to have that moment with two of her favorite bands. How incredible. So when her character, they didn't really know where it was going to go with her in the start. So when she wanted to go, she was naturally progressing into a darker kind of character. Because before she was a little bit brighter, she had the blonde hair. She was wearing like more Dragon Ball Z blue and white costumes. And then it turned dark. You know, I got the call from WWE and they go, she's going to go with a darker theme song. We just want to let you know, like, permission to use this is my brutality. And I was like, fuck yeah, dude. Like, yes, go for it. Yes. So, I mean, I was fully aware of, like, the plan and what was going to go down and why it was changing and all of that, which is totally normal.
It's cool that you got that call as well, like, they checked with you first. Like,
oh, yeah. Talk to the guys from WWE on a weekly basis.
I'm seeing it Thursday. I'm going to see WWE in Cardiff on Thursday. So, yes. I can't
That's
wait.
Awesome.
I can't wait.
That's cool.
Well, Ash, as we start to wind down on the conversation a little bit, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people associate you and kind of influences just everything kind of horror and spooky. And we've talked about skulls and metal and emo music as well. But like, I think there's so many different layers of what actually makes you tick and what actually inspires you to write these songs. Like, is there anything that people don't really necessarily know about or necessarily would jump to conclusions of things that are a big part of your life and that kind of fill that gap in between music and day-to-day life?
I feel like people pretty much get the gist of me because I am not the most public person, but I put a lot of what I love out there because I'm very passionate about what I love. So, I mean, horror, metal music, art, cinema, and Disney, you know, paranormal. Those are all the things that kind of get first hurting. And I'm not too much more complicated than that. I like a good haunted house and I like a good pizza and a good horror movie. And that's about it. Less than 6 months to Halloween, guys.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. It's true. Well, every day's Halloween in the emo metal world, really.
In this house, yes.
Have you had any weird paranormal activities happen to you? Like,
well, one was there's a place. It's not what you think it is, and I don't want to give too much away, but it's one of the top three like coolest haunted things I've done around the world in all my travels, and I've done a lot of really literally across the globe, and we had a paranormal experience there. I've gone three times, and each time there's a specific room where it feels like someone's pulled. Have you ever felt like one hair get pulled on your head? Like that feeling? Mm. It felt like someone kept pulling one hair on my head, and I kept having to like go like this. And then my boyfriend, we were in the basement where there's actual documented satanic sacrifice, like a murder in that basement from a cult. and there's a pentagram, and they say, if you feel comfortable, walk around the pentagram in the basement. And he has a pentagram tattooed on his leg, and his pants were ripped right over the pentagram. Isn't that nuts?
Wow.
Whoa.
I know. It was really weird. And just weird stuff. I feel like weird stuff like that. I'm constantly seeing people out of the corner of my eye, like all the time. And then I look and there's someone there, and I was like, I swear I could see like a white figure all the time. So I don't know. That's why I try not to fuck with that stuff too much. So I think I am a bit susceptible.
Yeah. But yeah, wow. That's
up there. Yeah.
That's terrifying. Yeah. That's all. I was going to say awesome, but it's scary. It's scary. I'm scared.
But I've been to like I love the Towers of London. Every time we're in London, I try to visit there. I just get so enamored by dark history. You know, I love it so much. And then I go to all the dungeons, you know, the San Francisco dungeon, the Amsterdam dungeon, the London dungeon, wherever they have those around the world, I try to visit those. And we do cemetery hopping when we're on tour. You know, I've gone to all the big cemeteries like Necropolis in Scotland. I forget the name of the one in Paris. The one place I haven't been to, though, is I've never been to the catacombs.
Oh, me neither.
I want to.
I was trying to work out how we could do a podcast from the catacombs, but I think we probably, the audio I reckon it would be interference on the audio, and it would be like a whole thing. Yeah.
We thought you had voices.
Do you guys like horror movies?
Yeah.
Have you seen As Above, So Below?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good one.
Nice. Very good one. Yes.
Around the catacombs. I love that. Scary.
Ooh.
Yeah, we.
As we were recording this, I mean, we've talked a lot about your influences, especially early on, from AFI to The Used and everything else in between. But I know no doubt such a big part of your musical awakening as well. And obviously, they've just reunited for the first time in forever at Coachella. Have you seen any of the footage? Did that mean a lot to you, getting to see them back on stage just and existing again?
They were my first concert. In 1995, I saw No Doubt with Rage Against the Machine and Weezer opening.
Oh, sounds what? Rubbish. That sounds terrible. Oh, that's it. Yeah, we don't want to talk anymore, but no, go on, please, carry on.
Sorry. And, you know, I was like 11, so I didn't really care about Weezer and Rage Against the Machine so much because I was, you know, I liked the girl. Looking back, I was like, damn it, actually, like, you should have got the shirt. And it doesn't matter. And so, yes, I fell in love with them, and I'm a bit bummed I didn't get to go to Coachella to see them play, but I did see the footage, and she just looks and sounds better than ever. Devil, she made, but sign me up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brandon Boyd have, yeah, done the same sacrifices, I think, because neither of them are aging. It's unbelievable.
Brandon was like my hero in high school. To the point where even my mom got me a djembe and a didgeridoo for Christmas because I wanted to be him so bad. And I never played them once. They just sat in the music room and I would like, look, that was it. And I just thought he was so cool. I love his voice so much.
I'd love to know how many red tattoos exist because of Brandon Boyd, because he had that red tattoo on his forearm.
Thinking about how I almost got a red koi fish because of him.
There you go. Yeah. What a guy. Yeah, we had him on before, and it was the day after I'd had my COVID booster, and I was quite ill after it. And then as soon as he came on the screen, because I was shaking, I was like shivering. It felt like somebody was shaking my spine all day. And then as soon as I saw Brandon Boyd, New Metal Jesus' face, I was healed. I stopped shaking instantly. It's the power of the Boyd.
I believe it. He was my biggest hero. He was someone like VIP meet and greets didn't exist back then. You know, bands didn't do that. But I would wait overnight so I could be front and center at the barricade. And I gave him this pink monkey once that had a note attached to it saying, like, please, I want to be a singer like you someday. You know, I don't know what else. It was a long letter. I was one of those fans. And he took it. And they played Drive with it on his lap. And MTV or like VH1 Behind the Music was filming that concert that day. So it's also on the show. So for like 50 me, I was like freaking out. And we played a festival and I got to tell him that story. So it was pretty cool.
No. Nice. What was his reaction? How did
he thought, I'll have to go back because I actually wrote it down in a notepad because I never wanted to forget it. But he said it was something like, you know, I'm so honored I could be a part of your musical journey and like look at you now, because we were on the same festival. And he's like, that's incredible. I could have aided in any way in your progression. You know how he talks. It was very like, oh, you know. Sorry. And I just feel so lucky. But the only person I haven't met besides Davey, but haven't even like been in the same room of, is Gwen Stefani. Maybe someday.
Well, you know, that opening slot, now that they're back together, so why can't New Year's Day open up for him? I mean,
start a petition, please.
Yes.
I doubt they'd settle us. They'd probably take like Olivia Rodrigo or something like that. But
no. No Year's Doubt. There you go. There's the tour name.
If only.
There you go.
A girl can dream.
Let's all manifest. Let's all think about it really hard right now. Right. That's almost certain that's going to happen now.
Well, Ash, thank you so much for taking the time and just sharing all these stories. We've absolutely loved it. Before you go, if there's anything else you'd like to mention, a plug, maybe tease a UK tour or return to this side of the pond, please do.
We're going to be coming this year.
Yes!
We're coming this year, but I can't say any more than that. But it'll be end of this year.
Right, I'll get a fucking Desperados in now.
I can't wait for some English breakfast from Weatherspoons. We have a UK tour manager who totally teases. He's like, why do you like Weatherspoons so much? I'm like, because it's amazing. Because it's the best. And I get to have Nando's and Bog Mama and all the things we love. Desperados. And I just can't wait. Oh, we'll play some shows too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, nice. That as well. Awesome. Yeah.
We'll go shop and drink and eat food and play some shows.
Nice. And visit some towers and some dungeons.
Yes, and some dungeons.
Yes. You've got Edinburgh to go, I think. There's one in Edinburgh, so I don't know if you've been to that one. But
no, I haven't been. We didn't get enough time there.
Oh, yeah. It's just down from the castle, so you get to see the fantastic castle on the hill, and then just down the bottom is the Edinburgh dungeon. So
Amsterdam one was bad. Amsterdam one was cool. People always ask, the last thing they say is, like, do you have anything? And I go, no, just thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for giving us your time. Thank you for the music. Thank you for the inspiration that you've given to so many people, the same way Brandon Boyd and Gwen Stefani did to you. That's happened. That's happening right now.
So weird.
It's amazing. So but weird. Yeah, you completely deserve it. So congratulations on all your success so far. I only hope for more for you. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yes! Yes, that was the wonderful Ash Costello of New Year's Day. What a brilliant chat. We covered topics I wasn't expecting, and I didn't expect us to get into or her to open up about. But yeah, what a mad career she's had and life she's had so far, and I'm just absolutely chuffed for her, and congratulations on all her success so far and the bands, and I enjoy watching it and expect much more from her as well.
I just loved hearing all those interactions she's had with these bona fide emo legends in particular. Like, it really shows that early 2000s influence and just the music we all appreciate and love, and being able to be in the same room as some of those people. Well, being Jared Way's house is the next level. I don't think many people have been inside Jared Way's house. So I'm very jealous, but also very intrigued of what it's like.
Yeah, that's true. But that's the thing, see, it's like people are, when I said earlier that I want to know what his house is like, what you've got to realize, people, is we were there to talk to Ash about Ash, so I didn't get too much into the Jared Way, what's his house like? Oh, tell me everything. Because we were here to talk to Ash about her life, which has been fucking unbelievable. So thanks again to Ash for being so open, honest, and fun with us.
Yes, yes. The new album, Half Black Heart, is available right now to buy, purchase, stream, listen to, and all that malarkey. And the band will be touring the US with Lacuna Coil throughout May. Tickets are available. Go to the website for all of those show dates and links and every nice little thing like that. We've been going to a bunch of shows lately. Festival season is literally around the corner, which is very scary because we need to prepare for that. But the Blackout are playing. You got Slam Dunk Festival coming up.
Yes, we have.
Prepared? Preparations? Have you done
God,
any?
No, we haven't done any rehearsing yet. That starts...
Day before.
Closer to the end of the month, beginning of May.
Fair.
We get in. I think we've got 3 rehearsals. It's basically just us relearning I Love Myself and I Want to Live, I guess, from The Best in Town. Cause I think that's the only song that we've not played in 13 years. I don't know. Like, we stopped playing that. The last time I remember playing I Love Myself and I Want to Live by The Blackout was supporting Paramore in Islington Academy. So, yeah, I don't know if we've played it again since, but we will be at Slam Dunk. And yeah, I can't wait for Slam Dunk. It's going to be a fucking great time. If you are worried about any clashes with The Blackout, just know that anybody who clashes with them will play their best songs last. And they're on any bands that are clash with us are on for half hour after us, so just make your way slowly over. I would, after watching all of us, isn't it?
Good advice, really. Good advice.
Yeah. But yeah, so we've got that. Nothing else planned for later in the year, which is sad. I will try. I will try.
We know.
Sean Smith guarantee, I will try. I promise I will try. So if we don't play any more shows this year, please don't come to me and nag me, because it's not my fault. Okay?
He's the one trying. We all know this. We all know this. But speaking of festival season, I mean, we, the podcast ourselves,
we
have an announcement coming this week that I can't tell you about, but I can tease it here. Yeah, I've told you. Yeah, you know. Yeah, it's probably slipped your mind a little bit.
I know what you're talking about now. That's the thing. There's so many festivals, and we are normally so busy during festival season.
I
didn't know whether you were just telling everyone, including me, what we're about to do.
No, I can't yet. But I can tell you on next week's episode, but it'll be announced midweek. So if you follow us at Sappening Pod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter, you'll find out. And if you want to find out before anyone else, even before we're supposed to tell people, head over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/Sappening for the news first on everything, the exclusives, and you just get involved with a community of people. Trust me, it's something you want to be a part of before all these mad events start happening in the summer and you can enjoy it with the sun and all that.
Yes, what a fucking community we've made. What a fucking bunch of loving, helpful, wonderfully beautiful people we've curated together in a group somehow, who just look after each other and look out for each other, and it's fucking amazing. So as always, massive love to our Patreon supporters. You're the best.
If you head to the description of this episode and every episode, there's loads of names there that we thank. But as always, Sean is going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sappening Podcast Patreon community.
Yeah, Patreon community. Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi, Paul Hirschfield, Scarlett Charlton, Nathan Croshaw, Mitch Perry, Tony Michael, Dilly Califragilistic, XBL Grimwood, They Who Shall Not Be Named, Liam Connolly, Amy Louise, Molly Malloy and James Bowerbank, Kat Bess and Alexandra Pemberton, Nothing Minor, Still Need a Bassist, Jonathan Gutierrez, Jerry Robinson, Amy Dawson, Murray Grimwood, Pick It Up, 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 Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Caroline Robinson, Stephen Aston, Kate Puttock, Jenny Munster, Carl Pendlebury, Louis Cook, James McNaught, John and Emma, Jason Heredia, Danny Eaton, Martina McManus, Sean Foynes, Thomas O'Neill, Evan, Dan Peregrine, Ollie Ainsbury, Emily Belly, Kalila Keane, Adam King of the Goths, Parslow, Sophie Ansell, Josh, I ordered a chicken and an egg from Amazon. I'll let you know, crisp. Good one. Lavender Lee Martin, Vicky, Laura Russell, Fraser Cummins, rah 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 James, whose birthday was it today? Happy birthday. The Kyle Smith. Still funny. I still don't know what who the Kyle Smith actually is. I mean, I know who this Kyle Smith is, but the viral video that's referring to, I Googled him last night and I still haven't seen it. Last but no means least, Connor Lewins and family and everybody in the description. Thank you so much for listening. If you've listened, get in touch with us at Sappening Pod on the fucking social medias and send us the words, winky valve.
Winky valve?
A winky valve, yeah. The winky valve's gone. I don't know what that means. I don't even know if that's an actual thing for anything in the world. I just like the two words winky and valve put together in that order. Valve winky? I don't mind the other order either.
Well, let us know about your winky valves or valvey winkies. It's a weird way to end, really. But
I don't fucking know. Yeah, whatever. Let's fucking liven this bitch up.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next and every week and every Friday with more winky valve goodness right here on Sappening Podcast.
Yes. Winky valve!
Winky valve!
The new podcast of Sean and Morgan, Winky Valve. Just talk about how winkies. Oh.
You're listening to Sappening Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.